This is Rob and Mike from the McClellan Financial Group of Asante Capital Management, and this is Think Smart with TMFG. Mike, the last time we got together, we explored some of the different fixed income and cash options that we have used or seen clients use over the years and some of the risks and rewards related to those. Today, I thought we should expand it a little further and move up the risk scale, if you like. So how would you improve your returns beyond fixed investments?
When you start to add equities into the portfolio, you're going to see a better rate of return. But again, you're going to increase the risk. So equities, you have a different pieces you can add to equities. So you can do individual stocks. You can buy mutual funds, which have, you know, 50 to 100 stocks in them. Or you can move more to an index type of approach that will have, you know, between 500 and 5,000 different stocks in the portfolio. We find that as you add more to the portfolio, it does reduce the risk. The interesting thing is it reduces the risk, but it does not necessarily also reduce the expected rate of return. So it's almost a free lunch out there. You can go increase the amount of stocks, you can lower your risk on that portfolio, and you can actually get either the same or a better rate of return.
So one of the things is, you know, when you look, and let's say we're looking at a 10 or 15 year period, how can you be certain that you're going to get that equity, what they call the equity premium? What are the ways to make sure you at least have a fighting chance of getting that?
Well, it starts simple. Own the equities and all of them, right? It seemed pretty simple. But when we do the research on it, we find anytime we have mutual funds that are trying to, let's say, outperform that equity premium, we find, 5% over time end up actually being able to outperform. 90 to 95% don't.
So if you're struggling and trying to outperform over time, why would you, you know, if you've only got a 5% chance over 15 years of outperforming the market, why wouldn't you just buy the market?
Yep.
So let's start off. And so we have a client who was 100% fixed income. We now are going to add 10% in equities. We've decided the easiest way to do that is not individual stocks, but a diversified portfolio of stocks, probably around the world.
Yep.
You want to keep your fees low. So now we've done that and we want a little more return. What would your next choice be? Would you add more equities or what would you do?
Well, I mean, within equities, you can go and we've done tilts before where you can tilt towards small cap. And as you tilt more towards small cap, again, you increase the risk on the portfolio, but you have an expected higher rate of return. Same with pushing toward value stocks. Again, adds a little bit more volatility sometimes to the portfolio, but again, the expected returns are higher from that. So you can tilt the portfolio to these areas to get a little bit of a higher expected rate of return.
So if we have cash in the bottom end of the risk scale, what would be the top end of the risk scale that you and I are comfortable with? What would that look like?
Probably the real estate side of things.
Okay.
You know, we generally in portfolios use REITs. And the nice part about REITs are the liquidity, right? Because you have liquidity inside the REITs. They can trade. You don't get stuck with all the problems that are associated with direct real estate investments. And a lot of people do the direct real estate investments. And there's a lot of extra risk attached to that. You know, if you're doing a rental property, number one, you have your tenant risk. That's individual, right? So now you no longer have a REIT with 1,000 pieces of property. Now your risk is associated to the tenant you put in your property. And if they decide not to pay your rent and decide they're going to destroy your place, you have a lot of risk.
You know, rental properties always sound great, but they come with issues. You know, we have a rental property in Florida. There's always something breaking down and going wrong. You know, we're in our office. We rent our office space here in Thornhill. Just in the last week, we've had issues with plumbing and septic and all kinds of things. And whose problem is that? Well, initially it's ours, but eventually it's our landlord's.
Yep.
So do you want to bring those problems into your portfolio when you could own liquid real estate that you can get out of anytime you want?
My experience with clients in real estate is 90% of real estate tends to be a pretty good, happy situation. They have had good renters over the years and things have gone pretty smoothly. But 10% is so horrifically bad, it makes it not worthwhile for the 90% that went okay. You know, as soon as you have a bad renter, they've destroyed your place. I've had clients that have spent, you know, $80,000 after a after their renter leaves to put the place back in order. And they all come to me, they said when they rented it, they seemed like good people. Again, the problem that you find is liquidity is always a big issue. And the world is always changing. We know that. We discussed at one point, I had a client that had taxi cab licenses. Now, they never drove a cab in their life. They use it as an investment. Back if you go 10 years ago, people would buy a taxi cab license like a bond. And they had a 5 to 6% rate of return, and the value stayed pretty constant on them. All of a sudden, technology came in and Uber arrived. The value of those taxi cab licenses changed dramatically overnight. And the problem is they weren't very liquid and weren't easy for people to get out of. The same thing you're finding with when you buy a rental property, technology comes in, Airbnb brings this new technical overlay on how the world works. And if it's a non-liquid investment, you can't adapt very easily to that.
So, you know, if you went to sell a taxi cab license, probably the only buyers out there are other people who have taxi cab licenses.
Yeah, now the world has worked. It's no longer an investable asset. It's now for people who want to buy the cabs. But people bought it with a different expectation.
Absolutely. So as we move up the risk scale, we want to make sure we're getting the reward, the higher return. So you mentioned real estate being at the top. Just under that would probably be 100% equity portfolio. What if you wanted to go past that? What if you were willing to take on a little more risk? What would your first choice be?
There is a speculation that goes into a lot of the up-and-coming companies, you know, IPOs, things like that, that come onto the market. There's a lot of private companies that have high risk. Trick is, it's hard to find the ones to invest in. Private companies are a very interesting thing, and they can work very well, but it's very hard to get exposure to them unless you're actually working for the company and you're in a high up position in those companies.
We've also seen, you know, some of the problems with private equity, with, you know, even with the labor-sponsored funds over the years and how those worked out. And the biggest problem is the illiquidity of the investment. There may not be buyers for the companies that you own.
You take it for granted when you own IBM, every second of the day, there's always someone lined up to buy your stock at a reasonable price. When you buy a small company, that isn't the case, right? We have lots of clients that have companies that have been actually publicly traded companies that are very thin, and they have no way to get rid of them. They're trading on the open market, but there's no buyers on the other end of the sales.
If they went to try and sell $10,000 worth of shares, they're going to drive the price down just like that.
Yep.
So I probably think a safer strategy, rather than getting into speculation and private equity and all those different things, would be just even adding a little bit of leverage and to a global portfolio. So maybe you go out and borrow $50,000 and, you know, your cost might be 4% a year interest, and hopefully you'll earn a little better than that. And if you do it in small amounts and keep it safe, that's probably a better way to increase your risk and increase your return.
Yeah, leverage is a good strategy. The tricky part about leverage is it takes a while for the real great points of leverage to come to fruition. I did a loan, I think, 15 years ago. And it's interesting, for the first period of time when you do the loan, you're paying your interest. Let's say your interest is at 4% and your investments are getting 6%. So there's not much there. In a lot of years, you'll be down underwater. The trick, though, now is I borrowed $20,000. Now it's worth $40,000. The key is the loan is still at $20,000. So now the 6% return is no longer on $20,000, it's on $40,000. Now there's a big spread between what I'm making each year and what I'm paying in interest. But at first, that spread is very low. And you got to put in the time to make sure that spread has time to expand. So 10, 20 years down the road, leverage turns out to be a phenomenal idea. Early on, a lot of stress to go through.
Especially if it drops in value. You know, your start date bias might be poor, and that $50,000 investment may be $30,000 12 months out.
And the problem you find is whenever people do the numbers on how leverage works, it's always looking 20 years down the road when everything looks very rosy. The problem is getting to that 20 years, and you need coaching usually to get through there.
It's a journey. Well, We today have explored some of the different ways of increasing the risk and hence the return of the portfolio. This is Rob and Mike with Think Smart with TMFG from the McClellan Financial Group of Asante Capital Management.
You've been listening to the McClellan Financial Group of Asante Capital Management Limited. Asante Capital Management Limited is a member of the Canadian Investor Protection Fund and Investment Industry Regulatory Organization of Canada. Insurance products and services are provided through Asante Estate and Insurance Services Incorporated. This material is provided for general information and is subject to change without notice. Every effort has been made to compile this material from reliable sources. However, no warranty can be made as to its accuracy or completeness. Before acting on any of the above, please make sure to see a professional advisor for individual financial advice based on your personal circumstances.